Hey there, and welcome to Speakeasy with Kendra Fisher. Join me each week as my guests and I take a deep dive into all of the conversations we've been taught are better left unsaid. No more silence, no more hiding. This is a safe space where anything goes. This week on Speakeasy, I am joined by physiotherapist Jill Mueller, who I am currently working with learning how to retrain my nervous system. Good day, my friend. I am here with my physiotherapist, Jill Mueller. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh my gosh. Thanks for asking me, inviting me to come on.
I have this habit of calling on my service providers and the people that I'm working with personally, because I get into these situations where I'm working towards something and I get amazed by the information you guys have. And I'm like, okay, I need everybody else to know about you. So here you are. You're stuck. You didn't know you were signing up for this when you took me on as a patient.
I'm here for it.
I love it. So yeah. We have so much to cover today, and I'm so excited because one part of our conversation is going to be a bit of a continuation to the conversation I just had with the anxiety MD around somatics and kind of training our nervous systems to respond differently. And I've been kind of hinting at this on my videos and I have no idea how to talk about it. So I'm so excited to have
Neither
you here.
Neither do I.
Well, you're going to have to figure that out.
Okay.
Because I'm calling you the expert. So Fake it till you make it here. And okay. we're going to convince the world that you have the right words. So first off, a little bit about you. What's your journey to your profession? Why did you get into this line of work and how did you kind of, you know, discover this path? Let's get the elevator pitch on who is Jill.
Yeah. Well, before I give my elevator pitch, can I just say to your listeners, if you have not heard, and you did not ask me to say this, if you have not heard your last interview with the anxiety MD, please listen to it. It was so good. So packed full of information. I loved it. I thought it was great.
We were laughing, and I thank you for that. We were laughing after because we were like, wow, we just covered so much.
Because
I want to know it all. Like, I've been following his work and he's just so brilliant at his ability to share that information in a way that's like, oh my goodness, like I need everything you need to tell me. So I'm actually really excited because I'm also going on to his podcast. So I get to kind of continue. So yeah, I'll share with everybody when that's happening too. But you're right. If you haven't listened,
it was good.
It has nothing to do with me. You want to hear this conversation. He's so good.
So full of information that I could relate to and kind of segues into what I do. So I love that. Yeah, I got started. I didn't know I wanted to be a physio. I took kinesiology in university and was like, what am I going to do? Ironically, my mom was a physio, but back then it was, it was like home care or working in the hospital. And I didn't know if I wanted to do that. But anyway, I got into it. And the further into my career I got and I did orthopedic physio. So that's when you have sports injuries, that sort of thing. I had an opportunity to work with the women's Olympic hockey team, which was really
amazing.
Cool.
And how did I not know that? How don't I know that? Why have you not told me that?
I think I told you.
Oh, but so it was now like, I'm just.
Well, I'm going to
like
put you on
back.
The spot. No, yeah, it was a while ago. It was a while ago. No, it's okay. It was like a moment. It was a moment in time. It was a placement. Like,
okay.
So it wasn't, it wasn't like official. I worked with them.
And not really what we've been talking about. So
not at all what we've been talking about.
This is me letting myself off the hook, but actively apologizing for not being a better listener. I am working on it.
No, I don't mean to put you on the spot with that.
It's okay. Please do.
But the ortho stuff, I loved. I really loved. But I would get these people coming in who were really complex and not really responding to the traditional therapies that I learned in school.
Yeah.
And the more I got to see more and more of them, I became more and more frustrated because I realized how much I didn't know. You know, when you graduate, you know everything. And then you go through your career, you realize how much you actually don't know. So that happened to me.
Okay.
And then I went through my own experience, which is what you're going through. And we learn so much from ourselves, right?
Yes, we do.
So I think
hard way.
hard way, but also upon reflection, you can kind of see how far you've come and where you need to. I know you've talked about how you know you need to kind of pivot, like the things that you've learned, they were helpful, and now you're trying to expand.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like out of coping and out of like managing
to
more resilience and more capacity. Right.
I feel like Russell said it best in a way that I hadn't been able to verbalize it yet, which is really kind of that pivot from cognitive therapy that has allowed me to cope very effectively into more body mind therapy that is now teaching me how to heal.
Yeah. And integrate it. We're not just a head. I get these crazy visuals. Like some of my patients, I feel like they're just this head walking around and there's like no body.
Yeah.
And they can totally relate to it, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Because the body may have been a disappointment for them, created pain and that sort of thing. So it's more about creating safety coming into the body.
Yeah.
We'll get
yeah.
into that. But
yeah,
generally, like I have endometriosis and I was trying to get, I had a 10-year fertility journey. And it was after all of that that I realized I wanted to help people in that arena. And that, and so I sort of pivoted over to pelvic health. And again, we learn a certain structure and I kind of still was seeing these people with complex pain and persistent pain and not being heard in the medical system. And I felt like I needed more information. So I took a 3-year trauma course. I took a biopsychosocial course, like pain science courses, like all the things that you don't really traditionally find in physiotherapy at all.
No. No.
So melding sort of the mental health with the physical health, and the somatic therapy fit in perfectly because it's about the body. So
one second. If you had to give like a Cole's Notes definition of somatic therapy.
Well, this is what I was talking to. This is where it's really hard. You know what?
Yeah.
In a Cole's Notes version, it is instead of taking a cognitive approach to managing pain, anxiety, depression, right? Like things like cognitive behavioral therapy. That's the biggest one that like acceptance therapy.
Course.
That's there's a lot of therapies that are very cognitive, which can be, I am not slamming them. They can be very helpful.
Yeah, for sure.
But the somatic part, like I said, you can cognitively try and address things, but it's still, have you heard of the book, The Body Keeps the Score?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So it can still be, the body's still responding.
Yeah.
And, and we're like cognitively trying to address that, but I almost look at it as our primal brain. It's almost like we have this primal brain, which is in the brainstem, and this higher brain centers that are the cognitive centers. But if it's at that primal brain, it is reactive. It's like, am I safe? Am I not safe?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so by using the body approach, we can really teach it safety, which then at that primal level, which might be missing.
Well, and I mean, I think as somebody who has spent years and years mastering the cognitive therapies and a lot of time practicing coping strategies that are very symptom controlling or supportive in terms of like, you know, how do I get myself out of a panic attack? How do I live with functional anxiety when I have to go up on stage to speak? What do I do when? So, I mean, a lot of my approach has always been those tangible tools that we can use that will get us through the moments.
Yeah.
And what I learned over the past year of being just like sat down with chronic pain, grief, suffering, struggle was, I could keep pushing through. Like I could keep doing that. I could keep just white knuckling my recovery by coping and doing the thing that I needed to in the moment to get through that moment. But what you started to introduce me to was a very different approach that I hadn't necessarily considered. I mean, I understood that there is a psychology of pain. I understood that there is a pain experience that isn't necessarily an accurate reflection of where we're at in our bodies. But I had no concept of the ability to approach it differently. And meeting you, walking in, I was like, I wasn't ready for you.
Most people aren't.
No. And it's fantastic though. I mean, it's because it was so validating immediately to have somebody mm-hmm. sit there and say, look, like your pain is real. Mm-hmm. It's just not necessarily stemming from what you believe it's stemming from. And
yeah.
What can we do?
Well, something just came to mind, and I don't want to put you on the spot, but
you can put me on the spot. I introduced you as my practitioner, so this is me welcoming
you. Well, I know
you.
You've spoken of this. That's
certainly.
Why
you're fine.
You're very you're open fine. About yeah. this part. But the interesting thing that I want people to realize is yeah. that, like, your father passed away at the time you were having your surgery.
Yeah.
And our brains, hopefully you just have one, but our brain will make an
sometimes
association.
Sometimes I wonder.
It often makes associations mm-hmm. in order to prevent that hurt, that anxiety of the whole experience mm-hmm. from happening again. So ironically, what can get stuck is that grief yeah. with the sensation of having wherever that surgery is.
Yeah.
And so when you feel grief, you may have symptoms come up sensory wise in that area where you had surgery and you're recovering from, mm-hmm. or you could have sensation that mm-hmm. then brings up grief, and they're attached together. And the yeah. somatic therapy is really seeing what are the patterns mm-hmm. that are in our nervous system. What are you stuck with? Like, you're very cognitive, and yeah. I try and pry you away from the cognitive. I might bring you back to the cognitive because it's very comforting to you.
Well, and it's necessary, right? Because it becomes overwhelming. It's shocking. And just to get a little further and deeper into this, and I'm happy to, because as far as I'm concerned, like, the actual experience of seeing somebody's lived experience going through something, it really helps us to draw parallels. So I'm yeah. here for it. But yeah, I mean, right in the beginning, when I started with you, it was like, okay, we're going to kind of ease into this. And I'm like, right away, my cognitive brain and my I can cope with anything mind yeah. is like, no, we don't need to take baby steps. Like, let's just dive in. And then immediately, like, let's go for instance. So I walk in, what are the first kind of questions that you ask in these appointments? Where do we start? Like, what does that look like for somebody if they're like, okay, I'm really interested. I think my nervous system is shot. I think that I am tied, my emotions are tied to my physical sensations. I'm curious. And I am amazed by how many people right now are on this exploration with no directive.
Well, I think most people don't know that when they come to me, because I'm a physiotherapist, right?
So yeah,
they're not coming to me. They're not coming to me for that connection at
yeah,
all.
They don't know what they're about to get.
Yeah. Case in point, right?
Yes. Yes.
They come to me with whatever sensory or mm-hmm. manifestation of this, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
because I'm primarily in pelvic health, it might have to do with endometriosis yep. or persistent pain, pain with intercourse, pain with bowel movements.
Yep.
I take the complex ones. I have yeah. people at the clinic who treat people who, now, not that giving birth and postpartum, like, that can yeah. come with its whole yeah. other story. And I definitely work with people who have had birth stories, traumatic birth stories, mm-hmm. and want to give birth without it coming up again. Absolutely. Yeah. But yeah. I basically take the people who no one else, they don't know what to do with it. It's overwhelming for them. And it was for me, but I yeah. just went to, like, figuring out how can I help these people, right?
Yeah.
But generally, I have them fill out the same questionnaire as everybody, talking about pee, poo, sex, reproduction. Am I allowed to say all these? Is he
100%? And if not, there'll be a beep somewhere, but I can't see why not.
Okay. So all about, but then I get into also, when they're with me, mm-hmm. what is the like, if they come in and they say, in 2020, this happens a lot, in 2020, I started to really realize I had painful urination, urinary frequency, urinary urgency, and it came out of nowhere. I think I had a bladder infection, but it was culturing negative. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, how was COVID? How was your, what was your, because the 2020, I know what was going on in a 2020. Yeah. And then we were all upregulated in 2020. And I have some people, they had to stay in a house with their one kid and their husband was with the other kid because this kid had immune issues. Like, I'm like, whoa, that's a thing. Like, it's not like we're together, we feel safe, we're having fun. Like, it's a different story for everybody. Some people loved it. They're like, yay, I'm isolated, I don't have to commute to work, right? And other people, it was like, I don't feel safe in my place. And I was stuck there for several years with in that unsafe. So I like to get the context around maybe when their symptoms started, going back to what we were talking about with you. But it, I mean, it could be, as you know, Dr. Russell Kennedy talked about, like adverse childhood experiences, like our brain can be primed to be on high alert already. And then it's just the straw that broke the camel's back. But I don't necessarily go straight into trauma. I don't go straight. I assess. I know you are very open. So I knew you were ready to dive in. You're the type I need to kind of pull back. So am I. Yeah. I had to learn how to slow down. I needed to learn how to listen to my nervous system because I'm like 12 steps ahead of it. And I'm like, catch up. You know? So it I kind of have sort of the framework around their questionnaires and their intake form. But then I might start with an open question, like, what brings you here today? And what are your goals that you want to, but then if they aren't really aware of the other side of pain science, I might introduce that and say, does that land anywhere with you? Like, just because I don't want to also throw it in their face.
Scare them away.
Yeah.
Scare them away because it gets a little bit like, why are we asking what color I feel? And I say that freely. I mean, Dr. Wilson, or sorry, Russell asked me the same question, like, or he was mentioning and alluding to that. That's how he identifies. And I was amazed too, because when I came to you, it was, so just to kind of set it up, I'm living with pain chronically, and it is phenomenally better. I will say that I'm one of the very fortunate ones that surgery has seemingly made a significant difference for my endometriosis story. But that being said, I mean, I still get pain. I still get uterine pain, and I have no uterus. I see that.
I want people to know that's a thing. And the reason it's a thing, the reason it's a thing is because we have a map of the body on our brain.
Yeah.
And if you've heard of phantom limb pain, right? So we can literally have no limb and pain in that limb that does not exist there.
Yeah.
So tissue and is not required for pain to be produced in that area. And this is where it gets more confusing when we have that tissue.
Yeah.
Like, so when you have a uterus or you have, it's like the blame and goes all on that. But then when it's gone, it's like you're kind of open to something else going on.
Well, yeah, you have to be, because you now it's just that, now it's just that, okay, so hang on a second. And I think that the value of that and the reason that I brought this up is because I find in this space, in terms of like chronic pain or people who have physical response to trauma, which I am one of them, and I'm deep into this now and very much learning my way through this. It's offensive. It's offensive sometimes when you are in pain and you're being told the physical reason for pain is no longer there. And it's very difficult then with our cognitive brain to reason and to not feel insulted by somebody being like, well, sorry, but it's not your uterus because we've removed that. And it's like, okay, well, this is, it's frustrating. And I think exactly what you just said, the tissue doesn't need to be present. However, when the tissue is present, we can still put everything on that. It can still be, well, no, this is my endometriosis. I know it's on my uterus. That's why I'm in pain. I can justify it. I can bank on it. I can put my focus on it, and I can live that pain like a champ every day. Mm-hmm. And the piece that I am just so amazed by, and I want to share openly because I think it's so validating, is the pain can still be very real.
It's the same sensation. 100%. It is the exact same sensation.
And it's not just you're making it up.
You're not making it up, but I want people to realize it is the brain that determines pain 100% of the time. There's no like, the tissue is one data point it will consider.
Yeah.
But it's only considering that data point because we can have damage to our tissue and have no pain. So, you know, when you end up and you look and you're like, what? How did I get that bruise?
Where did that come from?
Or how did I get that little paper cut? I don't even remember.
Well, if you live with
it.
Health anxiety, you dive into WebMD and you find out that you've got some mysterious. Yeah.
Well, he did that too, right?
Oh, like, yeah. There's the other wormhole.
Yeah. And that's a thing too.
Of course.
I think, yeah, like my biggest passion is knowing all of the components that contribute to pain and helping the client. There's never just going to be one, by the way. We are much more complex than that as humans.
Yeah.
But it's like, if we are, for example, have sensitization or health anxiety, these worry thoughts, having those, the research shows that even if you have it cut out, you can't cut out those components. You are more at risk of coming out of surgery still in pain. And we can test that with questionnaires. So if somebody's scoring high on those, I'm like, here's the opportunity to optimize your surgery if I'm seeing them pre-surgically.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Here's the opportunity to change it if you continue to have pain after surgery. I'm not anti-medical. But I am very pro, let's look at the whole story.
Yeah.
Because it's not just the tissue. And I'll say the reason that medical doctors and the medical system, and we're just as guilty as physios because we don't, we're probably one of the professions that learns this the best, but pain science, medical schools have 96% of medical schools have zero compulsory education in pain in North America. That's a stat that is just shocking.
Yeah.
So when, to your point, when you go back and say, I still have pain, they don't necessarily know. Well, they probably learned about the homunculus, but I'm telling you, they probably didn't. That's that map of the body on the brain.
Like, yeah, the homunculus.
The map of the body on the brain. You should look it up. Google it.
I will now.
Funny guy with like large hands, like, or it's a representation of what it looks like, but big hands, big lips, because these. And these are very important to our survival. So we have lots of neurons in them, right? We can tell what we're touching. Is it sharp? Does it have a stinging when we put it near our lips? Like evolutionary wise, that's, you know, if we touch our elbow,
survival.
not very important. That's why it's like, I can't really tell where maybe I'm on the outside, but like it's, and we can get smudgy.
Yeah.
In the areas where we've had stress or surgery, and that's called body schema or sensory motor dysregulation.
Just my torso at this point.
Right? We can remap that. There's evidence on what to do with limbs. It gets a lot more. I have a friend who's doing research on this right now in the UK in terms of the pelvis. It gets, because we usually do right, left laterality stuff, and the pelvis is just one area. So we can't really do that. Yeah. I do a version of that. But I'm like fascinated by this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, me too. And I mean, I'm certainly, amazed by it, and I'm amazed by it as well beyond just the actual pain response. But the other piece that I'm really diving into, because I think it kind of, I almost think for me anyway, that it's a preface to the pain response, is the fear response, the nervous system, and what that then translate to, because for me that translates into pain. I seek pain as soon as my nervous system has a reaction.
Yeah. There are a lot of therapists that will say sensation plus fear equals pain. And I've experienced that myself. So I'll give you a little story related to this, how this applies to myself. I was training for a running trail race. And I noticed sometimes I felt amazing. And other times, everything about me was trying to stop me. I would get pain in my right lower quadrant hip. And I just like almost like this anxiety, tough, very difficult breathing, like all of these sensory things that we're trying. And I would get frustrated. I was very frustrated. Yeah. And I, so then I sort of started to track it. And I noticed it was only happening in the second half of my cycle. And in this, I had trained myself to be anxious in that second half of my cycle for 10 years. Cause I'm like, am I pregnant or not pregnant? And so I'm like in the 2 week waiting period of like, hopefully it works this time. And so when my body felt this shift hormonally of ovulation and progesterone and the estrogen drops, it was like, oh, this is when anxiety happens.
Yeah.
And so anxiety would happen. And then in my mind, I'm thinking when I'm trying to run, it thinks I'm trying to run away from something, which that's can happen for a short amount of time. Yeah. But when I'm trying to run 10, 15K, working my way up to 35, it's like, I know this is a, like this is not happening. And it would just try and slow me down. Right.
Yeah.
And so it's then unreal. I just shifted things. Like all I did was trained better, like for length of time when I was in the when I felt better. But in that second half, I did shift things. I tried to calm my nervous system. I did a lot more yoga, walking, that sort of thing. And actually, I ran the best race that I ever could just by ebbing and flowing with my nervous system and less training.
Yeah, and I mean, so let's. To me, I mean, I relate. And again, I'm so overwhelmed by like how incredibly insatiable I am for the knowledge on this right now, because it's just like, I want to know it all. I want to know, I want to work through this. And for me personally, I have a lot of pain that comes from childhood trauma, or fear. I have a lot of fear that comes from childhood trauma, a lot of emotion fear that comes from that. And I've also gotten really good at being in pain. My body is really good at, hey, guess what? You're going to be hurting a lot. And for the past 2 years, especially with the endometriosis, it was just exactly that. You wake up and the first thing I do was like body scan. What's hurting? What's not right? What am I up against today? How horrible is this going to be? And I mean, it doesn't matter how you want to break that down, setting myself up for failure. Cognitively, I am focused on negativity. I'm going to experience negativity. Subconsciously, I am priming my nervous system to be in fight or flight, and I'm going to live there because my nervous system response is protect your body at all costs and how that looks. And so I come into your office and it was this bizarre experience, and I'm sharing this story. Right away, it was kind of, you were getting into, and I was very emotional when I showed up to your office. I remember walking in and I had never met Jill in person. We've been in communication, pardon me. And I walked in and I gave her a big hug, like I already knew her, because there is a connection. There's a connection when you're on the journey of understanding one another in a way that you have felt so unseen for so long. And I got in there, I did the questionnaires, and it was kind of like, okay, what are you feeling in your body right now? And I was anxious. I was nervous about being there. This is something I don't understand. I'm apprehensive about starting something else that may or may not have a positive impact, or maybe this is just going to feel like another failure, nothing's going to help this, and I'm stuck with this forever, which unfortunately comes with chronic illness. I mean, that is a mentality that is hard to battle, because there's that like, undeniable, I'm stuck with this for life and it's going to negatively impact me forever. And so I was up against all of that walking through there, and we had this moment, and it was like I laughed and cried at the same time. But I got to a place where I'm laying on a treatment table and you're asking me questions about my body and how I'm feeling things and what I'm identifying. And one of the things that I often get is a pain in my left arm. And that pain immediately to me as a first responder, as somebody who's seen all of the commercials, as somebody who has lived with anxiety that has affected my heart rate and my breathing my whole life. Immediately when I feel left shoulder pain, I'm like, uh-oh, that's a symptom. Like, what's going on? So the second I feel that discomfort in my left shoulder, I immediately go to, is my heart okay? What's my heart rate like? Am I breathing? Is this emergency? Is there tightness in my chest? What symptoms do I feel? And Jill, you can you take it from here, kind of what your thought is in response to that, in terms of like, so you're having a conversation with me. We've now identified that I have this pain, and my response to having just a simple pain in my left arm, which is inconsequential when we put it in retrospect. But can you kind of take it from there? Like, what your process is, why you would then take that route? Because I was amazed. I was mystified. And I was like in tears and laughing when we got there.
Yeah. So I mean, I want to back up a second because I think it is important. And this was mentioned on your last podcast. It's important to kind of, if you came in anxious and so we kind of played around with the lighting, we played around with the table in terms of setting a scene that was comforting, because it wasn't comforting to start with.
No, it wasn't.
So we laughed about it.
The lights were bright. The table felt like I was laying on rubber.
It was
insulting to my senses.
Yes. And
the music was horrible.
Yeah. Like that, I mean, I don't remember, but it's so subjective space, right? Yeah. I really tried to do a good job of making it look not medical.
Yeah,
right. I have these little crystal, like it's just like a salt lamp, like, you know, a little hippie doodah, but a little bit intentional with that. Right.
Certainly.
Because a doctor's office wouldn't have any of those. I'm like, let's just make this as soothing as we can. But some people respond to that table. Like some people, I don't even get to lay down. Some people, I take them out of that room and we go out back. Like outside, not in the winter, but because I can tell they feel trapped. So we want to just bring the nervous system back from that hyperarousal state, that fight flight that you were in, or some people are in freeze and I have to do a different technique to bring them back into the space. And sometimes people have never been in rest and digest, and that is not where they're comfortable.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if I had a patient come in, am I allowed to swear on here?
Absolutely.
So I had a patient come in. First time I'm seeing her, she walks in the door. She looks at me and she goes, "You're not fucking touching me."
Oh.
And I said, and I was like, "Oh, I fucking love it. I love that you know what your boundaries are." And I kind of matched her energy, right?
Yeah.
Like in a, and she just went like, "What?"
Whoa.
Because as physios, we do learn to be fixers.
Yeah.
And I very much have laid off that. And so calming somebody's nervous system might not be the agenda. It might be matching it and then sort of titrating, he used that word, titrating into calm and then back out, because the brain does not like anything it's not familiar with. Especially calm with a lot of people, right?
No, like now, it's uncomfortable.
Yeah. And I knew you were well-resourced cognitively. So I was just playing around with the things that were not cognitive. I'm like, these lights, and I turn them up intentionally. You're like, oh God, no. And then we, you know, turn them down. And I can feel all of this. I can almost feel what you're feeling in a sense, but I want you to be aware, right? How's the table? Horrible.
Yeah.
Horrible.
Rubber.
And I'm like,
rubber.
Yeah. And we laugh.
I'm not even going to say what I said, but it didn't feel good.
Yeah. And so I put down this really soft blanket that, you know, and then you were like, oh, this is better. And I could see you take a deep breath.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm like, do you notice that you just settled onto that and like took a deep breath? And then the light was coming in a little bit from up top, and you were like, I said, does that bother you? Because I can turn those down. You're like, no, it's like the sunset or sunrise. So that gives me a glimpse into what is resourcing for you.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So I wanted to set a little bit of the scene there. And then when we got to your shoulder, because this is where I'm looking for associations with the brain. And there's very much a cognitive association with sensation there. It's like if you think of one of them as a neuron, like the sensation in your left shoulder, and the other one as a neuron in your brain that is the what's wrong with me, trying to figure out what it is. There is a super highway of those attached, right? And I'm like, you've been working on that for years. I'm not even going to go there. So I said to you, I was like, we're going to be weird. Because as soon as something's like weird, it's not threatening. I mean, that's the intention anyway. I'm always assessing your nervous system to see whether that brings up something else. But I think I asked you, like, is there a color or is there a shape to that? And you're like, what the F are you talking about?
You're not wrong. It was like, it catches you off guard, right? Because it's like, what do you mean? Is there a color to the pain sensation in my arm that tells me I'm about to have a heart attack and die? Why, what color do you want it to be?
Well, that's the thing. Like, it's almost like we've got these other neurons where we can look at imagery. We can look at, behavior. So behavior being like, do you have an impulse to like push me away? Like, and I'll work with that, but we'll do it slowly because it's, it's basically unprocessed stuff that's in there that wants to be processed. And so we're trying to facilitate that processing. And so it's like these other neurons are just out in space and we're trying to make a little pathway from either the sensation or the emotional cognitive, although that's so strong for you. I'm like, really just like, let's let that one rest. And trying to attach these other things to it so that it, because that gives it capacity, that gives it resilience. It has other options, other roadways to go, not just this super highway. Does that make sense?
And then what's the outcome of that? So let's say, like, I mean, I get it. I wouldn't want to jump on that highway either because I'd be really terrified of getting run over. But what happens? So you start to create, and I feel like people have been hearing this a lot right now and it seems trendy and I want to take the trend out of it because I'm also studying it and learning about it and actively participating in healing using these methods. What is the outcome? How do we, I mean, we hear a lot about creating new neural pathways. We hear about it. We see it. We hear people alluding to it. And if you know nothing about that, it just sounds like another catchy, what am I buying into now? But I mean, it's pretty spectacular. So I'm going to, what happens then? So we start to build new roads. We make some new paths. We make it so you don't have to jump on that highway. What then?
So the idea is really creating options for the nervous system. Also by doing this somatic tracking, which means, somatic means body. It a lot of times when we have an uncomfortable sensation or an uncomfortable emotion, anything uncomfortable, we resist.
Of course.
We've learned to resist. That resistance is seen as a danger message to our brain. When we are wanting to get away from something and with some urgency, that is a danger message to our brain. So we're trying to look at it in the lens of safety. So by looking at that sensation, and not everybody's ready to just dive into this. Like, you said, we have to go slow. And, we did more than I would do in a lot of people in one session. So by looking at it with color, and you were like, why are we doing that? I'm like, perfect. You you're like questioning this. You're curious about it. You're maybe a little frustrated or whatever, but it's not like a threat. And not if it is, then I'm going to something else. And then I might titrate to it and then like come out again. Right. So once I see someone, so the idea is you're you're getting the brain a familiar with something new, a new way of looking at it. And then you could be, most nervous systems are like okay with it for a little bit, and then it starts to like build in pain, or in your case, it might build in the anxiety. I could see the, you know, not, this isn't necessarily what happened, but like, because
because
it's a super highway, it could go back to cognitive, and I could say, "How are your feet?
Yeah.
And you're like, what? Why are you asking me about my feet now? And I'm like, because they're a part of you too. Mm-hmm. It's like drawing it away from what it's used to. And then I might let it go to the cognitive and we're like chatting about it for a while because that's your comfort zone. Mm-hmm. And then once I see that that's settling, I might pull you to somewhere else. Like it's kind of an art and a dance, and it really is.
Yeah. So it's, and I don't know if you remember saying this to me, but we got to this place and one of the things that I carry a lot of tension in my shoulders and in my neck. And oftentimes when I start to get anxious, and I've only learned this since starting with Jill, because I don't recognize my unconscious behaviors that reflect the anxiety my body starts to feel. I recognize it very much so now. Like right away, it's kind of like, oh, you know, my neck's getting sore. I start clenching. Mm-hmm. And I was in there and we were doing this. And it was funny because the words you said to me that just kind of put me in my place for a second were, we did this kind of body scan. You were just kind of asking me how things resonate with me, how they make me feel. And it was bizarre because you would say something and I could, like, the first point was I could feel the emotion in my throat. I felt like I was mm-hmm. going to cry. And it was that kind of trying to swallow that feeling like I'm going to cry. And you were like, well, why are you holding it there? And I'm like, 'cause if I don't, it'll come out. And just hearing myself say it, I'm like, okay, so clearly it needs to come out. And you just kind of chuckled. And then you, like you said, you recognized that that was starting to create emotion that was getting me tense, getting me to a place where I was less receptive. And you immediately then went down to my feet, which is a very calming sensation for me, for whatever reason, always has been. And then you said, you know, what else? And as somebody who lives with health anxiety, I scan my body a million times a day. It's kind of like any little twinge, you know, if I get a pain in my tooth, it's like, if I get, you know, my hair blows the wrong way, I want to know why it's blowing that way. And you were having me do this and I had identified my arm and you went to my arm and I explained to you what happens cognitively the second I feel that in my arm. And you put your hand on my arm and you just said, that's a lot of responsibility for your arm. And I was like, wow, like just to think of that, like this little twinge in my arm, I'm assigning it so much responsibility that it is responsible for determining whether or not I'm safe right now and whether I'm about to die. And mm-hmm. I kind of chuckled. And at the same time, it made me so sad. It made me so mm-hmm. sad to recognize that I had such trained responses, both physically and mentally, that any sensation, any normal sensation that my body feels, I've assigned it so much responsibility that no wonder I'm exhausted. No wonder I am just like walking around in this state of, am I about to die? Am I safe? Am I okay? And that was exactly what happened. We did that. I identified it. You relieved that. I got to a place where I was calm for a second and then I sat still with it. And you saw me starting to get tense again. And you said, do you have legs? And I went, what do you mean? Do I have? Yeah, they're right there. You're like, can you feel them? And I thought about it and I could feel them. And I was like, yeah, I can feel them. And you were like, how's your arm? And I was like, my arm's fine. Like what? And then I was just like, once I pieced it all together, I was like, you sneaky, like that was impressive. That was masterful. But it's incredible because it's so attainable. And I will say this, I recognize that I have done a lot of work on myself and that I am very, very committed to that. Mm-hmm. So I'm not suggesting this experience will look the same for anybody else. I don't have a clue. But what I've recognized and what I am like giddy about every day right now is the realization that I get to grow and heal so much more now than I've ever experienced. And that's awesome because there's been so many times in my life where I'm like, I'm great. Like I'm good. I'm on fire. I can manage this. I'm functional. That's awesome. And now I'm like, hey, like I get to go way beyond function now because now I can accept that there are all these things that I can allow others to walk me through and deal with and face and actually heal from instead of just learning how to deal with.
And I think I saw that before you, actually. I remember on the
100%.
Because when you said giddy, you looked at me and you were like, you are so excited about this. That's what I'm putting my trust in.
Yeah.
But I knew you enough to know that what you had been doing. And I'm like, this is such a big piece to expanding your nervous system, I think, right? Like, I don't get that with people who come in, I don't know much of their backstory. Yeah. So I have to figure that out. And I'll say, just based on what you're saying, in case anybody's worried about coming into their body, because you explaining that gives me more insight as a practitioner with you, because
great, because just taking notes and my next appointment's going to be twice as challenging.
No, I think actually one thing that we may want to tap into and titrate into and out of, because there is so much hyper awareness sensory wise and so much checking in, we may want to play around with the idea of bringing it out of the body and then back into the body. Like I might say, for example, when you were lying there, like feel that light coming in. Just imagine that that's the sun and you're watching the sunrise, like where it's like not really in your body, but you're experiencing it, but it's out. You know what I mean? Like I might do that a little bit more because for people who it's like too much sensory focused, that is probably too much too soon.
Yeah.
Right.
So. Yeah. And I think it, like you said, it also ebbs and flows. Like it's, I can recognize when it feels unmanageable now or when it doesn't, but I will tell you, and this is an experience past starting to work with you and why I'm so amazed by this already, because I'm somebody for my entire life and I can go back now because of the work I am doing cognitively and with my psychologist, I've been able to now identify a couple of specific events that have happened in my childhood, medically speaking, that are definitely directly attached to fear and a sense of being alone. There were a couple of procedures that back in the day, our parents weren't allowed to stay with us in the hospital.
That is huge.
Yeah.
And that's a huge issue.
I had just had surgery. I had some complications. I was hemorrhaging. And I'm alone in the hospital without my parents. And I remember laying on the floor at the nurse's station because I wouldn't stay in the room alone. And that was the level of comfort I had. The level of comfort I had was I was at the foot of some strange woman who was caring for and doing her job, but like not my parents, not nobody holding me, nobody making me feel safe, and me being terrified of what I don't understand and developing a response and a reaction to that. That is immediately threatening and in a life or death capacity in my juvenile development and inability to understand what's going on. And so I can now, it's been really cool being able to piece it all together, but recognizing that there's so much complementary work to be done there. This is making my therapy better. My therapy is making this better. My ability to connect and also have some sense of what's out of my control and spirituality is better. But I, since I started with you, I had a scare. And when I say scare, it really wasn't. And it was a very unique and new experience for me. Because to me, if you told me something was potentially wrong with me physically, that's enough to shut me down. Like I had a test done and the doctors had ordered a scan to follow up on something. And there was some question about maybe there was something in my brain. Well, I'm sorry. You tell somebody with medical anxiety that they might have something in their brain and the word tumor gets tossed around. Like that's just like,
and that's a normal human response. 100%.
But also on top of that is my amplified, like there's no taking this in stride. This is like a doomsday until I find out otherwise. But just really having that kind of trifecta of understanding how my experiences are influencing this, understanding why my nervous system wants to go where it wants to go, understanding the belief that this is out of my control. And if it's going to be, it's going to be, and being able to put all that together, it made an entirely different experience. I mean, it's not like I liked waiting to find out, but I was good. Like I was okay. It was very much like, I'm going to do the things, I'm going to have the tests, I'm going to wait for the information, and then I'm going to figure out what's next.
Yeah.
And just having that, like it just lends to like the proof of there is a different experience available. And it's amazing. Like I'm booked with you like weekly for how long now? I don't even think you know how often I'm in your schedule.
I don't, but I'm excited. Like I love this stuff. And you said, what's the objective? Like what does it mean? Or not objective. You didn't say that, but like, what does it look like from here?
Yeah. And like that how is far a perfect, can we go?
It's limitless. Like I took this course for my patients. And then I'm in there realizing, oh crap, I'm somebody, like, basically we've all had an experience where we went through something that was overwhelming to our nervous system. As Dr. Russell mentioned, when we're under 5 years old, that really sets our brain up. We can see this on a functional MRI where a lot of these centers, we don't have a pain center, but we've got the emotional center, we've got the memory centers, we've got the cognitive, like, we've got all of these centers that we can see on a functional MRI are like lit up. They're on high alert. So it does, they're scanning the environment constantly for some, for these danger messages. Whereas somebody who has not had that, especially as a child, then it's like there's more processing, the brain, like you did, more space of processing that information. And then the brain has time to send these dampening signals back to the brain, body, where you felt a little calmer, where you didn't have as much pain. Like, it's this loop that, when we have an adverse childhood experience, like, it sets our brain up. It's still changeable. I want people to realize this is still totally changeable. The brain's fascinating. And when I learned all this, like what you said, you can almost look at your nervous system a little more objectively. And I had a lot of empathy for it. I was like, wow, that's a lot. You're doing a lot. That's a lot that, you know, you're constantly looking for danger messages. And then, you know, you do the work. I was, it was hilarious because we were partnering with people who didn't know what we were doing. And I still saw a change in my nervous system. And I didn't see it first. It was my business partner and my husband were both like, oh my gosh, you're like way more relaxed. You're not as reactionary. And I was like, oh yeah, it's so subtle. But it's so cool.
It's subtle, but as soon as you start to connect to it, I feel like the possibility and that hope, that like internal recognition that a different experience can exist, is just fueled. And it doesn't, it's not like an overnight thing. Like, I'm still absolutely, I'm getting out of my car in your parking lot and there's like that twinge of like, okay, how uncomfortable is this going to be? But with excitement. And like, it's kind of that notion of like, I can be scared and excited and happy and hopeful at the same time. And if that can be true, then can it not also be true that this emotional response that has this effect on my nervous system can also become something different? And so as it becomes something different, and one of the things I want to touch on, because I'm so interested for others to be curious about this and kind of learn more about this, but also I'm very aware of the fact that things can be overwhelming. And I saw, and before I met you, I'm sure I bought two or three different phone apps that were like, do somatic yoga, do somatic this and that, because you can like heal this pain that's trapped in your body. And it's like these images of people just like in tears, breaking down, sobbing because they're finally accessing emotional pain. I mean, how do you support somebody's being curious about this and getting into this journey, and what options are available in terms of really kind of learning a new experience when it comes to supportive therapy?
So with those apps, for example, the somatic really means using your body in ways where it's like, they might, there's kind of patterns with things like if we're having fear, like a lot of times it's here in our guts, like, and therefore we might do a lot of openers. Like people in yoga, when we're doing a lot of openers, might have that expression of emotion come up and they're like, what is happening? Or, or fear. But there's no, if you're, there's no guidance so much. Like when you're with me, when I'm with the patient, I'm doing it at a much slower rate. And therefore, if you're super anxious about things, I'm like, we might, one thing is like, if the emotion came up, well, give it a dial, like let it dial, just dial it down if you want, if that feels better, to a point where you can notice it and feel like it's not building. Because a lot of people will feel it building and feel out of control and not like that. And when I was told that, I was like, wait, we're allowed to do that?
I'm allowed to not focus like, on this completely?
Or I'm allowed to like dial it down and then just sit with it for a second. I was like, this is golden. Like for me, that was amazing. Cause for me, the emotion would just like come up and be like a volcano.
Yeah.
And so for me, that was really, really helpful. And then I'm processing it and my brain's looking at it like it's not something threatening. Right.
Yeah.
So those apps, I don't know if it's for everybody. If somebody wants to explore movement as a way to address some of these things, then I'm all for it.
Yeah.
It may not actually retrain it. It may just be a way to express it. And it's because they don't know where to go from there. Like it might take guidance, but there's pain reprocessing therapy. There's, which has a somatic component to it. There is evidence behind the somatic tracking. There's there's a study that was done on low back pain that's called the Colorado Back Study, if anybody's interested in that. But they wrote a book called Tell Me About Your Pain that is low back pain, shoulder pain, like I don't care. Just like submit the body part that is pertains. But it talks about how to use somatic tracking to help, and I was very excited about that research. And there's also somatic experience therapy, and most of them are, I was in the class, most of them are psychotherapists or social workers. They're mind therapists a lot of times. And then there were like very few of us that were body workers that were in that, but there is there is a site online that you can look up practitioners. I didn't go on it because it's in the States and it nobody knows what it is up here. But but I think it's getting a little traction to your
point.
It
is for sure.
Like people are hearing about it.
And I'll be honest, like I mean it's I think once you open yourself to something, obviously the universe gives you everything you need in terms of like well, hey, you're interested in this, so let's do this. And honestly, since I started kind of talking about this and trying to retrain the way my nervous system responds to emotional cues or physical cues or anything. I want to understand it. I want to heal from what doesn't need to consume me anymore. I want a different experience available to me, and I will commit to doing the work to make that possible. So that's, I think to me, a recipe for success. And if not, then I'll pivot again. But, I've been amazed lately how many people have kind of responded to this and been like, I'm doing sound baths. I'm doing flow therapy or float therapy. And I mean, I don't know the legitimacy of all of those things. The thing I like about the approach of having somebody tangibly to walk through it with me is one, it gives me a sense of safety with my anxiety. And it gives me a sense of understanding because there's constant reflection on what I'm feeling, what I'm experiencing, and the purpose of it. And I'm somebody who really benefits from having that because I can acknowledge it, but at the same time, if it becomes overwhelming, I'm going to shy away from it. And I don't want to. I want to continuously learn how to sit through discomfort differently and have really enjoyed that so far.
Yeah, the thing about the sound baths and the float tanks and that side of things that is great is that our world is very fast paced. And very small now. Like if you think of what's going
so
on
bizarre,
in the world.
Right? Yeah.
It used to be at 6 p.m. on the news, and if we watched it, we watched it. It would be their video of them coming way after math, seeing and videotaping and trying to get interview people. So it was sort of this distance. Yeah. Now we are in it. All social media is like, they're there live. They're showing their distress. We're seeing their distress. We're feeling their distress. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden that's in our world too, where it never used to be. And then, you know, computers and just more cars, more people, more like, so if you have a moment where you're slowing that down, how beautiful. Like if we're meant to be like, our brains haven't really evolved too much past being cavemen, cavewomen.
Yeah.
I mean, it has, but not at the pace the world has
Yeah.
Gone. Right. Yep. And so we do need those pauses. We do need that space. We do need that quiet.
Mm-hmm.
And we will feel it viscerally when we don't have that space. So I think that's where it is important.
Yeah. And I think that that's huge and a great reminder, because it's, you know, I've had that conversation before where our brains are not at all developed in a way to manage the world we live in. And yet we have this belief that we're the most intellectual and the most, you know, so we know best.
And
I mean, any chance you get to get out of your own way and drop your ego and recognize that there is a whole lot of reason that people who live in simplicity and live in, you know, the reason we all wanted to go off grid when COVID hit was because our primal instinct is survival, and survival isn't being in chaos.
Exactly.
And that is exactly where I have found myself over the past year, was I was forced into a state of chaos that I could not survive anymore, and not survive, not literally, but figuratively. I don't want to white knuckle my life. I don't want to fight for every breath. I don't want to be uncomfortable by every life event. And I think building resiliency has to be intentional. And we don't tend to be intentional about it. We just assume that as life happens, we are getting more resilient. And in fact, our reactions might be having the exact opposite impact. And I am living proof of that. And you are stuck with it.
No, well, that was me. That was me. I learned all this by experimenting on myself and taking the courses and realizing I was this person.
It's amazing. It's amazing. I want to thank you, Jill, for your time. We have somehow already blown through a whole hour here.
I know.
We like, I just, and this is forever. The beauty of connection. And I mean, that's someplace I'm stuck right now in life, is that that inherent strength that comes from connection and finding people and seeking support and growing through change. And I'm so grateful to have you in my corner, in my life. Your energy is phenomenal, and I'm excited to learn more from you. So I'm so grateful for you taking this time to be here with me today.
Oh, I'm excited to work with you.
We'll be back. Just you wait. We'll just make some more breakthroughs and we'll come do a part two and we can be like, wow.
Love it.
I'll tell you even more. Excellent. Thank you so much, Jill. And anybody out there, if you want more information on any of this, throw out some DMs, throw out some questions. And if I don't have the answers, I will bug Jill for them. So I look forward to our next appointment. And until then, thanks again. Thanks for hanging out with us on another episode of Speakeasy, where we believe conversations are meant to be had out loud. Share this episode to help others find our show, and don't forget to rate and review on Apple Podcasts. You can also join me at KFisher30 on Instagram as I travel across Canada and the US tackling the current mental health crisis with colleges and universities.